Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Gentlemen, I'm Melody Suderstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Tuesday, November 5th, 2013. Once again, thank you for joining us this afternoon. Lots and lots of things to talk about. Did you all go and vote today? Hope you did. Hope everyone in Virginia did. Virginia needs you and for you to get out there and vote. So let's get right to the market reports today. A little bit of pressure on the gold and silver markets today. Not so bad, though. It tried to go up in early morning trade. We're looking at down 360 for gold at $1,312. Silver managed a few pennies up, 5 cents, up a nickel, 2181. Platinum was down $5 at $1,455. And not a lot of action in the palladium markets today, $753. The USDX today is trading stronger, up 0.12 at 80.71. And they did the whammy on crude oil once again today, down 1.20 at 93.42. And let's see what the paper markets did today. They were all down almost triple points earlier in the day, but they reversed them. You have the Dow down 20 points today at 15,618. And the NASDAQ was up 3 at 39.39. And the S&P down 5 at 17.62. And the 10-year yield, 2.60. That's creeping up there along with the USDX and along with the US dollar. And all you heard about today, Al, on all the financial news programs was the S&P for 2014 is going to 1900, some predictions 2000. And of course, that meant the Dow would be far over 16,000, closing in on 17,000. And a lot of straight faces and a lot of BS coming out of the mainstream media, but they can certainly have their day. They better enjoy it while they can. And as much as I hate to see people lose their money in the paper market, the day is coming.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's a problem. I mean, there's no question that the mood has changed in the investment community, and to some degree even in parts of the United States. It's become more optimistic, and people are therefore inclined to go into stocks they're tempted by it. But you know, we talk about it on the program on a regular basis. You're dealing with paper debt instruments at a time when there's too much debt to ever be repaid, and that means a whole bunch of people's paper debt instruments are going to turn out to be worth much less than they are right now, or maybe worth nothing. Now, when's this going to happen? Don't know, but you know, if you're going to invest in paper, you're going to take a risk. You are going to assume an additional risk. It is, and you know, people do that. They'll take that risk. I understand, but the moment may come when people are going to sit back and say, "Uh-oh, that was a mistake."
And you know, it's okay to take risk, but just like anything else, you insure it. Insure that risk and get it insured with gold and silver. And if you want to play the paper markets, that's great. Just get it insured.
Well, you got to cover your, you got to cover yourself, and that's where it
absolutely
comes down to. You know, there's no way that you can absolutely insure. You can't technically insure what you've invested in stocks by with whatever you've invested in gold, but it's the idea of diversifying and keeping a core position against a time when there might be serious trouble.
Gold has always been looked at for how many years? Forever.
It's been at least 90 days now, Melanie. No. I'm not sure.
Gold has always been viewed as...
No, it's been centuries, for God's sake. It's been,
you know, it
3,000 years or more that people...
Insurance policy, you know, against, you know, insurance policy to cover your wealth. And so, folks, get it done. And we do have the IRAs. If you have any questions regarding a gold and silver precious metals IRA, give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. And we'll get you all the help that you need to get started on your precious metals IRA. And a lot of people, Al, well, why do I want to have my money in an IRA? It's, the IRA precious metals are for folks who want to continue to take advantage of the IRA. They don't want to pull out their money. There's penalties, there are taxes, and they just don't want to do it. So, again, ensure what you have in there. At least you can roll it over into a precious metals IRA and have your metals stored in a Delaware depository. I believe that is better than holding the paper. So it gives the person an option. And we often say on this program, physical delivery, taking physical possession of your gold, is truly what you want to do. But for those who have funds in an IRA and you want to take advantage of being able to hold precious metals in your IRA, give us a call.
The idea behind the IRA is, and the idea of the idea behind shifting to gold in your IRA is simply, well, one of the ideas is that in a worst case scenario, your paper IRA isn't going to be worth anything to speak of. And you're going to want to have, with gold, it'll still be worth something. You'll have value there that in that that will be accessible when paper is not accessible. But it's better to have your gold close at hand rather than in Delaware. It's better, in my opinion, to have gold in your IRA, even if it's located in Delaware, than it is to have paper in your IRA.
Exactly.
All right? But even better than that is to have gold in your hand. All right? Delaware IRAs is a big improvement, in my opinion, over paper IRAs. But gold in, you know, gold in your hand, close at hand, that's even a bigger improvement. So you do the best you can. There's no perfect solution. There's solutions that are better in my opinion, some are better in Melody's opinion, some are better in your opinion. But there's a hierarchy. Some are better, some are not as good. You do the best you can.
Absolutely.
You had a little snort there. To...
That wasn't
absolutely.
Me. That
All
was
right.
The TSA.
All right.
NSA.
All right.
All right.
What's next?
Oh, let's just move on. Big elections today. The big one again is the one in Virginia, and of course everyone's talking about Christie. He should, you know, take the election in that state, New Jersey, and you know, he's sort of disappointing. He was always the you know, just someone you could get excited about, but certainly the way he's handled himself, he's certainly portraying the what a true politician is in today's world. So I'm not excited about him anymore. He's just part of the group, part of the problem. And people seem to like him.
Yeah, he's become a professional.
Yes.
Rather than a passionate individual. He's become prudent rather than passionate, and a lot of people are disappointed, but other people are, you know, what are you going to say?
I guess Obama's the Gallup came out today with a poll, and it looks like Obama has dropped.
Again?
39% approval.
I think that's down. We're getting close to, that's interesting. I mean, we're getting close to only one person in three approves of Obama. It's going to be hard for him to make any kind of recovery. And I said, I don't know, maybe three, 4 months ago, Obama may already be a lame duck president. I don't know that he's going to be able to make a recovery on this under our, you know, if something extraordinary happens and he's able to play young hero, you know, the world may turn around and his stock may rise again. But more than likely, it probably won't. He's losing power, he's losing clout, and certainly he's losing popularity with the American people. One of the evidences of this has got an article here that deals with Obamacare. And this is in the Wall Street Journal, and the headline is, Young Avoid New Health Plans. Insurers say the early buyers of health coverage on the nation's troubled new websites are older than expected so far, raising early concerns about the economics of the insurance marketplace. If the trend continues, in other words, what they're saying is youngsters aren't signing up for it. Kids in their 20s and 30s, they're not signing up for Obamacare. And the system needs them. They got to have these young kids who don't need any medical care paying into the health insurance in order to fund the old timers who do need it. You understand? And if the kids don't sign up for this, Obamacare is in for a lot of trouble. The article continues, says, if the trend continues, an older, more expensive set of customers could drive up prices for everyone by forcing them to spread their costs around. And someone named Heather Filchin of Medical Mutual of Ohio said, we need a broad range of people to make this work, and we're not seeing it right now. We're seeing the population skewing older. So this is just one more straw on the back of the Obamacare camel. And I'm beginning to wonder if Obamacare is going to survive. I don't know that it's going to be terminated by people in the courts. I don't know that it's going to be terminated by people in the Congress. But it may be that the practical application is so screwed up that it just isn't going to work. They're going to have to make those kids pay into Obamacare, and they don't want to. Kids are smart enough to understand. It's like making someone who doesn't have an automobile pay for auto insurance in order to hold it prices down for the other people that drive. I don't want to pay for auto insurance. I don't have a car. Why should I pay for auto insurance? Kids are sitting there the same way. Say, well, look, we know that we're not likely to have any illnesses. Why should we be paying for insurance when we don't need it? Plus, if we don't pay for it, the only thing we have is a fairly modest penalty is affixed to our income tax. So we have a problem where people are kind of walking with their feet and just say, look, I don't want Obamacare. And so the question is, will Obamacare survive, or will it perhaps collapse just under the weight of its own impractical technology? What do you think, Maldi?
Well, the healthcare system had major problems. And I think whatever happens with Obamacare, it opened doors for if Obamacare fails, something else will come in its place. Maybe it will be the one-payer system. Maybe something will replace it. Or, you know, 40% of the Obamacare will stick. Maybe the other 60% won't. but at least there's some parts of the Obamacare that I believe will stay there. In any case, or whatever it means, I still don't like being forced to buy something and to be told what I need for myself in my health care.
Not only that, you're being told that in the name of affordable health care, you're going to have to pay more than you were paying. How affordable is that?
But the whole point is, don't tell me what.
No, I get that.
Don't tell me what, you know, don't tell me what to do, you know. And
it's absolute,
however,
liberty. It's a choice, freedom of choice. There's all kinds of things that are wrong with it.
But something will stick. So who will get credit for the initial change in the healthcare system? Who knows? Whether it'll be Obama or whatever comes in afterwards, or parts of it that sticks to it. But there's certainly a lot of flaws to it. I mean, already I saw headlines where school districts are considering substitute teachers.
Yeah.
We already talked about part-time people, the increase in part-time people. And we have to remember something, too. The problem with Obamacare that we're having today doesn't even have anything to do with corporations that have been given a year to extend it to their employees. So, you know, this is going to be going on for a long time. So what happens when, you know, they have to start bringing in their employees? So, and I think we'll see more of an impact on the unemployment also. You know, they've been given a one-year reprieve on this, so to speak. So,
so far.
Well, no, they have a
so
year.
So far. Yeah, they have a year
they
so
a year.
Far.
Yeah,
but we absolutely know they might not get 2 years before this is done.
Years.
Hard to say. Let's see, a year would put us out where? It's going to put us, is that after the next election, next November?
Absolutely it is.
Yeah, it's after the next
January.
So they will. It will probably, after the next election, they'll probably impose whatever it is they're going to try to do, and it'll be 2 years from the following election, and perhaps that's the time to strike. It'll give them the minimum exposure, political exposure, if it's right after next November's election.
So you're going to see a lot more about doctor shortages. You're going to see. And in the meantime, you don't have a choice but to sign up. Well, you do have a choice, but for most people, they don't have a choice, and they will sign up.
Yeah. Well, they'll.
And I think that's really what they wanted.
Well, I know that's what they want. They want everyone to feel obligated to do this. But again, the article we were just reading from the Wall Street Journal indicates that young people are not yet impressed by Obamacare. They don't see the need to sign up for it and pay an extra couple thousand dollars a year. And I don't blame them. They're having high levels of unemployment and so on. I know there's
people
subsidies that are available, but some, you know, on top of that, the kids are just saying, look, I don't need it.
And
I don't drive. I don't need car insurance. I'm young. I don't need health insurance. Most kids think that way.
And wait until the taxpayers find out exactly what it's costing them for the subsidies.
I understand.
And I'll tell you what, we had a family function this weekend, and one couple, wife lost her job. You know, he's a farmer. It's like, we can't afford this. We can't sign up for it. I mean, they're barely surviving, and it's like, well, we're just going to ignore it.
You know, I think part of the lesson on this is what happens when you allow the government to start regulating things like health care. I understand, I'm not going to argue, that no regulation should be allowed with health care, but the government never knows when to quit. They have never reached a point where they had a certain amount of regulations, I don't care what it was, and they said, oh, now we have as much regulation as we will ever need. There's always some genius working for government who sees a need for a new regulation. And as they pile on these regulations and regulations, they're just crippling this country. We're going to take a break. We'll talk more about government regulations when we return in a moment. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Be right back. Please stay tuned.
Electronics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
Hey, we got a wonderful special today. It's a small little package. My favorite $5 Liberty gold piece in almost uncirculated condition. It's great for bartering, small fractional, does very well in performance. It did extremely well when we got hit in the gold market in April. 90% silver. I have little bags of 90% silver, $25 face value. We have quarters. And the whole package, along with shipping, and $850. So it's a great little package with AU $5 Liberty gold piece, 90% quarters, $25 face value, includes all your shipping costs, $850. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you folks visit our website at DGScoins.com. And if you'd like to send us an email, you can do so, questions@DGScoins.com. questions@DGScoins.com.
You know, we're talking when we took a break, when we broke for the commercials, we were talking about regulations, and the government just can't ever get it through its head that there's a point where you have more regulation than you can possibly need. And all the regulations probably seem reasonable. All of them probably seem justifiable, and yet, in sum, they just destroy that which they presume to regulate. We've talked back a couple of months ago on the program, study that indicated, say what?
Yeah, look at the regulation that they did to the banking system and everything they get involved in, and look what happens. Sure, people get wealthy. They get wealthy. But for the mainstream, absolutely not. For the middle class, no, they get hurt. And then they have to pay for everything, for all these regulations that do absolutely no good whatsoever. I mean, they're not even good regulations.
When we talked about a study back probably about a month ago, 6 weeks, I don't recall exactly, here on the program, that reported that back in 1950, when this country was doing well, about 25% of the people who were employed in this country were self-employed. They had their own little businesses. They repaired shoes. They did excavation. They did plumbing. They had their own businesses. And we were a prosperous nation, and right now it's only about 5% of the people that are self-employed. Why have we gone from a world where 25% were self-employed and working hard and keeping the profits from their labor and being glad to work hard, trying to work hard, try to work more efficiently so they could make more profits? What happened to those people? They were run out of business by government regulations. I know a guy who is a great air conditioning repairman. Right? But he's got to work essentially as a criminal. He's not licensed. He's not sufficiently well educated to pass the tests that are required to do the work that he knows. He knows how to do this work. He could support himself handsomely. He's got to work for other people because he can't do the paperwork. He knows the job. He knows the work. He's great at it. This is what government does, and they are, by means of excess regulation, they are putting people out of business. It happens in medicine. It happens in roofing. It happens in plumbing. And it's bad for all of us. We've got a caller. Joe is on the line from Arkansas. Joe, are you there?
I'm here, yeah.
Okay, Joe, what you got?
If you wouldn't mind, I would like to expose a little bit, a little way that we've been misled about the facts of history. Again, might be a little bit controversial, but I'd like to do it if you wouldn't mind.
Well, I don't know if you're not giving me enough of a clue. It's like what you're saying is, I'm going to say something naughty here if it's okay with you, and I don't know what you're going to say exactly.
Go ahead and
take a shot at it, and if we don't like it, I'll just tell Frank, throw him out, and then terminate the phone call.
Joe, you know what you can say and what you can't say, so.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'm not going to use any bad words. But anyway, about 3 years ago, I was at a used bookshop, and they had Hitler's book, Mein Kampf, on sale for a real cheap price, so I bought a copy and took it home, and just recently I actually got around to reading the thing. And I found that it was very interesting. You know how we've all been told about how Hitler talked about the big lie technique, you know, that Hitler said that people are more likely to believe a big lie than a small lie because the average person only tells some lies, and he can't conceive that anyone would tell a really big lie, so that a big lie is more effective than a small lie. You know, we've all been told that Hitler said that. And when I was reading Mein Kampf, I actually came across where he wrote about that. And actually, the context in which he said it was that he said that the Marxists know that people are more likely to believe a big lie than a small lie. Well, that person only tells small lies, and they can't conceive someone would tell a really big lie. Therefore, the Marxists tell big lies. I found it very interesting that we've been misled, that, you know, we've always been told that quote as if Hitler himself said that, as if he was saying, this is the way that I operate, whereas actually the way he wrote it was to say that this is how I have observed that the Marxists operate. So I'm not saying that Hitler was a great guy. I'm not saying Hitler never lied or anything like that, but it's interesting the way we've been misled on the context of that quote.
You know, and people would say that, well, maybe it's not important. All right, maybe it's not a significant thing, but it is part and parcel of a war that's going on for people's minds. And the war is being waged by people who don't mind lying. There's a classic example of this, in my opinion, at the Jefferson Memorial in Washington, D.C. You can go up to the Jefferson Memorial, and they have excerpts from some of his most important speeches and documents that are carved in stone on the inside of the Jefferson Memorial. And one of them includes the text, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights." that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It's one of Jefferson's most famous lines. But they use the word inalienable. An inalienable right can't be taken away from you, but you can waive inalienable rights. Your inalienable rights. You can waive them. You say, oh, okay, you don't need to worry about that right. I'm just going to forego that. I'm not going to enforce my right. You can do that if the right is inalienable. But in fact, and that suits the government's purpose, but what Jefferson wrote in the Declaration of Independence, he did not use the word inalienable. He used the word unalienable. All right? Not I-N, U-N. Unalienable. The unalienable rights are the ones that come to you from God, and they are as much a part of you as the color of your eyes. They cannot be taken from you. They cannot be waived. You got them, and you got to keep them. Nobody can take them from you, and you got to keep them. The government built the Jefferson Memorial back in the 30s, if I recall correctly, if I understand correctly. And they intentionally, there's no way you can look at this and say, oh, they made a little spelling mistake when they carved the letters into stone. Bunk! It has to be intentional. And it's part of the way people are conditioned by use of certain words. Just get you in the habit of using certain words in ways that are contrary to your own interest. We trust the government. We trust people in positions of power. We assume they're going to tell us the truth and be here to help us. But, in fact, they don't. And if they can get you to use the wrong words, then they are empowered to kick you around, treat you as someone who doesn't have any significant rights. You know, the problems we have right now, those of you who think we have problems with the government, the problems are not based on people walking around with guns and clubs. We see that, and that's what we think in terms of, oh my gosh, here come the police, here comes the military, whatever, we're afraid of the police state, whatever. That's not the real problem. Our problem is that we are living in a cage of words. It's all about words. It's all about language. You have to develop a fluency. I've told people for years, you got to have as many dictionaries as you have firearms. You have to learn the words. And it's so much easier to shoot a gun than it is to pick up a dictionary and begin to study and see what words mean and begin to recognize the words that are most important. But that's how this system operates. It runs with words. And if you can master the language, you can master the system. And if you can't master the language, you are going to live a substandard life. Your ability to access freedom or liberty or even prosperity are going to be dramatically reduced. And this goes along with something we were talking about earlier in the program, talking about how government regulations ultimately impair. They don't increase our access to health care. They diminish it. They don't increase our access to low-cost plumbers or low-cost air conditioning repairmen or low-cost roofers. They impair it. They cause the price to go up because what are these plumbers and air conditioning repairmen and roofers? What do they have to do? Now, it's not enough that they do the work. They also have to do the words. They have to do the forms. They have to fill in the blanks. They say, what do they mean when they say, what's this mean? I don't know what this means. And then I got to sign it under pain and penalty of perjury. What does it mean? And so they just say, tack with it. I'm going to get myself a job working for somebody else. I can't deal with all the paperwork. They can't deal with the words. Those who can deal with the words, they can prosper. Those who can't will not. And I'm simply saying, you have to master language. That's it. And you have to recognize we're ensnared by words, not by firearms, not by clubs. It's the words that do us in.
And look how the banking industry, I mean, people buy homes. People buy homes. Well, you buy a home, you got, 100 pages of literature you got to, read and sign. Buying a vehicle, I mean, it's incredible.
A thousand people. I line up 1,000 people who've taken out a mortgage to buy a home. How many of them do you think actually read the paperwork?
Zero.
Just about. All right. I'm not even talking about how many understood it, which would be even a smaller number, but how many read the paperwork? And the answer is virtually zero. All they did is they hand you a form, and they say, sign your name down there, and you just say, okay, I signed my name here, and I get a house. You don't read it. And that form contains information that is important to you and potentially dangerous to you, depending on what kind of agreements you enter into. If you understood the words, you might not want to sign that document. You might realize you're putting your head in a noose. Again, how many people get the words? How many people understand? Not many. But that's how we are trapped and ensnared. So you have to become fluent in the language. And I didn't believe that when I didn't know it. I didn't believe it until I was, you know, I'm a senior citizen right now. But I didn't begin to appreciate the value of words. I'll bet I was in my 40s before I really began to understand how important it is to master language. What else do we have, Melody?
I don't know. Do we still have Joe on the phone?
I don't know. Is Joe still there? All right,
Joe.
What about
all the terms and conditions that you agree to whenever you go on anywhere on the Internet? You know, if you read all those, I don't think you'd have time to do anything except spend all your time reading those things. But you mentioned Thomas Jefferson, and I recently got a fundraising letter from the United States Justice Foundation with the Thomas Jefferson quote in it that I found really good. And so this Thomas Jefferson quote is, when a law is unjust, a man is not only right to disobey it, but he has a duty to disobey it. And inspired by that quote, I have not signed up for Obamacare. So, good afternoon. Good talk to you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
We appreciate the call, Joe.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I haven't signed up for Obamacare either, and I don't intend to. In fact, I'm considering suing them. Right? I don't believe you can make me sign up for Obamacare, in part because I've been through this before. I talk about it on the radio from time to time. The definition of drugs makes clear that the drug laws are only intended for animals. They treat people as if they were animals. And it says this. It's apparent. And I've used this argument. I've been sued by the Attorney General of Texas, and they'd invested, what, 6 years and $500,000 in pretrial investigation and lawsuit. And they came after me, and I was one of seven defendants. I was the last one defense. I was the last one added to the case. Again, they came after us. I read the relevant drug laws and realized they only applied to animals. I advanced a freedom of religion defense, which essentially said, Genesis 1:26-28 says, on the sixth day, God created man in his image and gave man dominion over the animals. Therefore, we can't be animals as a Christian, as a Jew. You can't say I'm an animal. If you do, it's a violation of my freedom of religion. I advanced a defense based on that fundamental principle. The government folded its tent. They left. The same thing is true with Obamacare. Obamacare is all about providing drugs. It's about providing food. The word food appears about, I've done a survey on it. There's 250 instances thereabouts in the Obamacare bill where the word drugs appears. There's about 150 where the word food appears, and there's another term, medical devices, and I can't remember how often that appears in there, but all three of them. The food, the drugs, and medical devices are all defined in terms of, they use the phrase, man or other animals, which makes clear that they regard us all as animals. I have a freedom of religion defense. If you try to impose it upon me, I think I'm going to try. You know, I don't know how it's going to work out, but I intend to try and say, nope, you can't treat me as an animal. And it's important. This is not a small thing. This isn't just a matter of people being a little bit, you know, obnoxious or hard to get along with or whatever. Your government sees you, ladies and gentlemen, as animals. You can see evidence of this yourself if you look at the 1906 Pure Food and Drug Act. 1906, been going on for over a century. The government has defined food and drugs under the presumption that men and women are actually just animals. Violation of fundamental principles of the Christian and Jewish faith. Violation of freedom of religion. It's an act of genocide before the Nazis went after the Jews in Nazi Germany. First thing they did is pass laws to define the Jews as Untermenschen, meaning they were animals. They were under. Unter means under. Mensch means man. They were subhuman. They were animals. As animals, you can kill them all. All right? You can kill the women and the children and the non-combatants. We might even get to the producers who start the music to set the probably not. We probably aren't going to do that. I'm Alfred Adisk. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom. Be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. I just want to finish this off on this business of animals. It's no small thing. All right? It's the reason we have the highest prison population in the world. It's because your government regards you as nothing but livestock. As such, you have no rights that are worth mentioning. The big rights are gone. There's no rights for animals. Right? And this is in the law. You can find this, again, 1906 Pure Food and Drug Act, Title 21, Section 321. Title 21, Section 321 of the United States Code. You'll find the definitions of food, devices, and drugs there, and you'll see they apply to animals. It's been there for a century in the 1906 Pure Food and Drug Law, and to the best of my knowledge, I'm certainly the first layman to read the damn law and understand what it means on a spiritual basis. You've got to be able to read and understand the words, and if you can, you can hold these people at bay, and if you can't, you're going to live in circumstances, you know, that are going to be difficult. You're going to be like cattle kept on the farmer's pasture. We've got a call from Annette from North Carolina. Hello, Annette. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good, thank you. I'm calling from Middleburn, West Virginia. Okay. In the meantime, I have two separate comments relating to items which you brought to our attention. One is with reference to Third Reich Germany. And nobody ever seems to mention how the Germans fared during that period when Hitler was running the country. In 3 years, by 1936, Germany was restored to such a state that people from Europe and all over the world, that was in America, went to Germany to see how it was done, and they wished that that kind of restoration would come to their countries. That's what he did. He followed biblical law in so many ways, and he actually practiced the very things that you all talk about, you and I talk about. The second thing is that with reference to man being considered an animal, Judaism's Bible, the Talmud, calls everyone other than a Jew an animal. And you know who's running our country today, so that's not, I'm not surprised that you brought that out. I was aware of it, though.
Well, you know, you talk about Hitler, for example. I understand that Hitler brought, you know, Hitler's been demonized and perhaps, who knows, people, and rightly so. I don't know whether it's, I don't know, I wasn't there, didn't see this. But I know that Germany was in a terrible condition after World War One, and Hitler restored them in a relatively short period of time to prosperity and power, right? And he did some great things for the German people. It may be that he went too far, and it may be that in the end he did things that were not good. I don't know. I'm not going to make that argument, but you got to give him his due. He helped Germany enormously, at least in the 1930s. He might have gone too far, I get that, but initially. And in that regard, he is somewhat like Gaddafi. Gaddafi took Libya. In his lifetime, he took Libya from the poorest country on the African continent and raised it to the status of the wealthiest on the African continent in terms of per capita income. He provided great, just free, virtually free gasoline, virtually free electrical power, $25,000 if you got married. They give you a house. For the first 20 years after you get married, you get a house, and it costs 10% of whatever you make. If you only make a dollar an hour, you got to pay 10 cents an hour for your house, for a place to stay. He made all sorts of things available to people, did a spectacular job, but he was demonized. So was Hitler demonized. You have to sit back and sometimes wonder, what is the real reason that some of these people were demonized? Are they really demons, or are they people that are trying to do good for their country? It's hard to say. There, you know, I won't say there's a clear line here, but there are legitimate questions.
Well, Al, there's something to clarify as well. What turned the German people against the Jews is that they knew what was incorporated in their religion, which caused the kind of behavior that they were noted for. And I'm speaking of Talmudic Jews. There was a small segment that observed the Torah, but they were a very segment. They did not make the rules. They did not establish national policy. That has been the problem all along. In other words, you read the Talmud and you see what the Talmud says. It says to treat everybody else as slaves and dogs.
Yeah, I get that. I understand that, and it is interesting. It's interesting from a perspective of irony that the Germans turned around and said, no, we're not the animals, you're the animals. And one thing led to another. You have to wonder, would the Germans have been inclined to pass laws that declared the Jews to be animals if the Jewish faith didn't already declare that the non-Jewish population of Germany was animals? You know, there's a little bit of what goes around comes around here, and there are peculiar questions that we all have to pay attention to. You know, you start calling other people animals, maybe they start calling you an animal. And maybe you live to regret that. It's important that we recognize that all of us have a certain level of humanity, and I don't necessarily like the word humanity. It's not over because, in fact, sometimes it implicates animals. But it's important to recognize that equality rather than say, oh, they're animals. Well, they might be animals now, but if they are, you will be soon. And when we're all animals, then what? What happens to our rights? Who protects us?
There was no extermination policy in Third Reich Germany. I want to make that clear. There was containment. In other words, they wanted to separate them from the general population
I understand that that argument is out there, and I don't know what the truth of the argument is. All right? I'm sure that the vast majority of people listening to the program would say they would dismiss the argument that there was no extermination policy, and they'd say that's just not rational, that's not reasonable. Everyone has seen pictures of what are concentration camps and bodies filled in ditches and one thing another, and we can wonder where they came from and debate this and all that. But generally speaking, we have a, you know, there's a mindset right or wrong.
Oh, wait a minute. I could even tell you about that. When the Americans conquered Germany, they had already been bombing Germany so hard that the Germans couldn't get food to not only the Jews, but their own people. You had Germans that looked like what you considered Jews that were just bones.
What I'm trying to get to is this. You know, the winners write the history books. Everyone understands that. And when we get done, after it's all over, then the winners attach some glorious reason for whatever war we just got through. All right? And the glorious reason inevitably means that the people who lost were some sort of demons. I won't say inevitably, but it works out that way a lot. I'm just saying it's hard to try to get a straight, legitimate answer that you can rely on. What has really been going on in this world? What is the legitimate history? Right? What really happened? And how much of what we think is true is just so much nonsense? And I don't know how to solve that problem. You have to keep your eyes peeled and watch the history in your own life. Maybe you'll be able to tell your kids or your grandkids or something one of these days what really happened. What did you see? Rather than what did the government or special interests or whoever report. Very difficult to get to the truth right now. Annette, we're going to move on, and thank you for your call. Thank you, Annette.
You're welcome. To love the truth, find the truth. That's the issue. When you love the truth enough, you sacrifice for it.
I understand that, but it's not easily found. That's a fact. And it says as much in the Bible. It takes hard, it takes a lot of effort, and I guess it's up to us to make that effort. All right, what else do we have, Melody? Thank you, Annette. Bye-bye.
One thing that I would like to comment on is I do have a client, and her mother and father were in the camps. Her mother is still living, and, you know, she's got the number and everything. And what she said is so many people, they were in such dire straits that they were offered, and if you had an occupation, if you could do something, and her father was a jeweler, he was a diamond cutter, he had a something he could offer, and they willingly, I'm not saying all of them, but her family willingly went because they were offered food, jobs, and that was the only thing that her father could see.
They were offered food and jobs if they went to these camps?
That's correct. And a lot of the family said no, but they went anyway. He died early. I can't remember. She told me he died actually in the camps, but her mother is 90 years old. She might even be 91. And, but there was, you know, the economy. You know, we talk about what happens here, and I'm bringing this in today. And, you know, you get people who are hungry, you get people out of jobs, you get people who lose, I don't know, their pride, their
you become desperate. When you are fighting for your very survival, you become desperate, you become frightened. You're willing to do things that you would not normally do or recommend or want anyone to do, and yet you become willing to do that in order to survive.
And sometimes,
terrible situation.
And sometimes that you look at it as help, and you don't want to make decisions anymore. And I guess that is a matter of hopelessness. You don't want to make decisions. You want somebody to tell you, come here, you'll have food, you'll have water, you'll have work.
And the point being, though, that those, I'm assuming that the point was that although they were encouraged to go to these camps because they were promised food, water, and work, when they got there, they found out those promises were lies. Is that what the lady told you?
They did work. You know, they worked, but the conditions were not what they had expected.
I understand.
And again, that's one story.
I understand.
And I understand.
There's millions of stories, and who knows which one, you know. Each one of the stories is true, but which one demonstrates the overall truth? How many are aberrations and how many are true for the vast majority? I knew a woman years ago I used to do plumbing work for. I'd fix once in a while. I'd go over to her house and fix her. She was an elderly woman, and she was a survivor of Auschwitz. And she had the tattoo on her arm. Her name was Tema. She was a Polish lady. She didn't speak English very much, but she'd come to this country afterwards, and she had the tattoo on her arm. And she'd talk about how all of her family died in the camps. She was the only one that survived. One of her sisters died in her arms. You know, there's no question that bad things happened, terrible things, horrific things happened. The numbers are debatable. I don't know what the numbers are. Some people say 6 million. Some people say less. I don't know what the numbers are. Again, I wasn't there. I didn't see. But I know the number 6 million can't be exactly correct. All right. Could it be 5,999,999? And the answer is yes, of course. Could it be 6,000,001? Yeah, it could be 6,000,001. But once you understand that the number can't necessarily be ascertained, then we get into a reasonable debate. What was the real number? And it's almost certain that however many Jewish people died, more than likely 6 million is an exaggeration. Right? It was probably less than 6 million. How much less? I don't know. I wasn't there. Didn't see. Don't know. But it's just the nature of these things that no matter who survives the war, if you get to write the history books, your objectivity can't depend on it necessarily. You know, you come up with a number, 6 million. Well, maybe not. And I know there's rules in Europe, for example, where you can't talk about it. You can't even debate. Is that a real number or is it an artificial number? Is it exaggerated? Is it too little, too much? Got to be a way of talking about it and trying to get to the truth where you can ascertain what was the truth, what really happened, who's lying, you know, who's exaggerating, who's minimizing, and not easily done. Where do you find the truth?
And again, I think the important part is also leading up to it. And I think you can make the comparison to some degree of what we see here.
I agree with you.
And, you know, we are to look back at history.
We're supposed to learn from it if we can find it through. Yeah, if you can find a true account, then you can learn from it. But what do you learn if the account is falsified and then you learn lies? And do they work for you or cause you more trouble? More than likely more trouble. We're out of time. We'll be back manana. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom. Thank you all for listening. Hope you'll tune in again tomorrow. In the meantime, with the good Lord, bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer.
Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. Bash you back.